You're listening to Red Center, your roundup of Red Camera news from the crew at fxguide.com.
Hi, and welcome to this week's Red Center. I'm Mike Seymour.
I'm Jason Wingrove. Hey, Mike.
And I guess the word on everyone's lips was...
insignificant.
And this referred to the fact that the December 3rd announcement from Red had been stated by Jim online in a forum to be...
insignificant.
Compared to what came out on November 13th. And I guess the question is, Jace, firstly, do you think that was true?
No, not at all. I mean, I think we've had some nice, I guess you'd call it like speed bumps. We've had a nice sort of tickle up of some of the specs. And so, no, definitely not. I think maybe we'd been led to believe that perhaps we're going to be totally reinvented cameras, and we're going to be having, you know, totally new vision, self-levitating, anti-gravity, something or others, but no.
I guess for me, it seems like really rough to hold the guy to every single word he's ever said. And I just think that was a poor choice of words. And but having said that, I say stupid things all the bloody time.
So absolutely.
I think we could get transfixed on this as some kind of major policy shift, but it's not.
Good thing nothing that we ever say here is written down or taken any notice of. Because...
So let's not assess the release in terms of whether or not it lived to some mythical hype meter. And let's just discuss it in cold, blunt terms where we can try and get some realism on what's going on.
And now, the Red Center News.
So they did come out with a new round of announcements, though, as I guess we both are of the opinion, that these are sensible refinements. If you like, continuations in the direction that was defined by the November 13 briefing, and certainly not a radical change, which I might add, Jace, had they had a whole new rethink, I'd have been quite worried.
I thought that would be pretty negative. I think if they totally changed everything, you know, and then obviously in hand-in-hand with that, if they totally changed everything, they would have had to then obviously make significant delays to the schedule. I think everyone would have just said, look, you know, moving on, let us know when you've actually got something to you know, something firm, because I just think it'd be, I don't think anyone really start paying much attention, really.
So let's discuss, I guess, what you think is the most significant. And if you could name one thing, and then I'll name one. What do you think the most significant thing is that was announced on the what was meant to be December 3rd, but Jim started leaking a little early?
I think it's the prices for the fixed zoom Scarlett, 2/3-inch Scarlett. I think that's really... because I'd sort of guessed at what the pricing would be, you know, like upwards of $5,000 for a full Scarlett by the time you add all the bits and pieces on. We're still not sure what those bits and pieces will be yet. But obviously they've announced a price of $3,750 for a complete skit. It's a complete kit for the fixed zoom 3K Scarlett and 3K for just for the brain and the brain and the lens. So I think that's much cheaper than I thought it would be, and I think that's fantastic. I think obviously they'd added things like time lapse and ramping and a whole bunch of stuff to this camera. I think that's a fantastic thing. There's a lot of people been wanting to sort of get that little part of the
So in many respects, if it went back to 3K for 3K, they've pretty much held to that. I mean, obviously you can nickel, but pretty much from the intent of what happened at NAB, they're holding the line.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess for me, the big one was, that is good, and don't get me wrong, I'm definitely going to buy one of those. But the thing that was interesting for me, of course, as a Red One owner, was the limited edition two-tone U-Bute Epic S35 Pro Cinema Package Epic X.
Not that you're being lured into the marketing or anything, but that does look fantastic.
This is basically a replacement for my current Red One body. I mean, it's got a CF recording module on the side, just like mine has, an IO module, and like my Red One has, and a battery module, which my Red One sort of has, buy the production pack. And the thing about this that was significant is that we had anticipated a $45,000 Epic. And so for a $45,000 Epic, I'm now going back to the NAB announcement, because I think the NAB announcement is just a valider baseline to be dealing with as the one in November. So if I go back to that $45,000 that I was expecting, I was going to get my $17,500 traded, and I'd have to cough up $27,500.
On top of that, yeah, and lose a Red One.
and lose my red one because I now that's fine. Like I really appreciated the $17,500 trade-in, and quite frankly, the specs on the 5K Epic with the higher dynamic range for you know $27,000 or effectively, I got 100% back of what I'd spent on my red one. Seemed to me a pretty generous deal.
Yeah.
Come December 3rd, that deal had changed, and it had changed for the better. Do you want to outline the parameters of the new deal?
Well, okay, the new deal is obviously you can get the full 17.5K trade-in on this camera, or you can basically, obviously owning a Red 1 gives you the ability to buy the whole package for $28,000. So that includes the brain, CF module, battery module, in-out module, everything. Basically, anybody else without a Red 1 ability to trade in is going to be paying $28,000 just for the brain.
Right. So what I'm actually getting, I was $27,500 in difference if I traded in my Epic.
Trading Red 1.
In my trading Red 1 for an Epic. But now, now I have, but surely I still have to trade in, don't I, my Red 1?
Well, you can either trade in and spend whatever the difference is there, 11 grand. You're the maths whiz.
So what you're saying is for 28,000, I can get the Epic.
Yep.
And then for, and that's like before I had 27,500 with a trade-in.
Yep.
Now it's just 28,000.
Yeah.
Or I can still go the trade-in route.
Yep.
And now it comes down to what?
Your Red One plus whatever it is.
10, 11 grand.
And you get... and you get that, and obviously you get all of the extras thrown in. Now, obviously, what the other thing the guys have added to this is that not only do you don't have to be the original Red One owner now, as long as you have a Red One that hasn't had any trade-ins or any hasn't been sort of executed, as they say, you can. That's a valid camera to be used for as this trade-in program. So if you've bought one, you know, via eBay or someone's, you've bought it from someone who's opted out of the queue. You're not actually the original certified owner. That camera is still valid as part of the trade-in program or to give you the discounts on the Scarlett. Once, obviously, that's only allowable for one for that particular serial number of camera once. So once that once someone's done the trade-in deal, you can't then sell that red one and the next person who buys it make get the discount as well.
Sure. So, but let's say you and I both walk up to the store, the new store in Red Headquarters, and you wanted to get an Epic and I wanted to get one. The very fact that I own a Red One means that I pay almost the same price that you do, though I get thrown in a CF module, a battery module, an I/O module.
Which is worth who knows what.
Yeah, who knows what.
Or significant.
Or I can also go ahead and trade in my and get my $17,500 back.
Exactly. On a significantly less expensive camera.
So in fact, if I was getting a bonus at NAB, I'm now getting two bonuses.
Yeah, and you also... Obviously, all of your LCD, you get to keep all your LCD stuff, drives, batteries. They're all going to work with this body.
So I'm pretty pleased with that.
Yeah, look, so you should be. I think there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be now ordering Red Ones to get this deal. I think,
which is going to stop them from stopping Red One sales in their tracks, which otherwise would happen, right?
Exactly right. So you can still go ahead and buy one. It's not limited to people that have already got one up until this point. You can still go and order one, which leads me to my other little tiny bit of news. I'll chuck that in the middle here, is that in terms of the delivery schedule, there now isn't one. As of first week of November, there is no back order for Red One. You can order it and have it within a week. It's they've sort of finally shipped the last few cameras and... yeah, so there's no wait anymore.
So let's discuss the announcement on the 3rd, just in terms of marketing for a second. Not as you might think we're going to discuss in terms of hype, but just what it was that Red chose to, I guess, profile, highlight in the brochure. Now, you might think this is a trivial point, and to a certain extent it is, but I think it does give a interesting window on current thinking. And I refer to the posted online PDF or JPEG that we saw for the detailed specs of the system, because we had this before, and the previous one, of course, didn't have the Epic X on it.
Yep.
But there's sort of, I don't know if you can read too much into it, but there's actually kind of a shift that we've noticed in how they're presenting the Epics and Scarlets.
Well, it seems to be what you'll virtually sort of, you have to almost dig into the fine print to see what, you know, how many K these bodies are. They sort of had delineated all the cameras between 3K, 4K, 9K, 6K. And now really they're more focusing on what the sensors are and the sensor sizes and the difference, which is, you know, fair enough. And I think that's a smart move because a lot of people are getting hung up on it. You know, why am I paying for 9K? I only need 3K. I think, you know, everyone's realized that that's not the be-all and end-all. All of these cameras are capable of doing an awful lot for almost everybody. So, you know, the fact that it's got 9K or 28K is really sort of inconsequential. It's what frame rates I can get out of it now. So that's really what seems to be the shifting of the focus here is now to, I think what they've realized is that people really do want, even in the Scarlett range where before there was nothing more, no overcranking, now you really get some fantastic frame rates.
Well, if there's a triad or a triangle of interesting things about the cameras, I guess, or I should say the brains, referring to the detailed system specs page of what they issued, there's kind of this three-way thing between frame rate, dynamic range, and frame size. And it certainly felt like first time out in the 13th of November that the focus was on frame size, you know, as you said, 9K. It really seems that there's been a greater emphasis given to now frame rates, though less emphasis almost given entirely to dynamic range.
It's not even mentioned.
Which surprises me.
Yeah, there was a delineation between some bodies that some would do a certain amount of stops and others would do more. And now it's, I can see no mention of what bodies will do what.
So,
which maybe they'll all...
It could mean one of two things. It could mean that they're simply saying, okay, you know that because the Mysterium and the Mysterium X and the Monstro haven't changed, so we're just not going to bother putting in the brochure. Or it could mean that they don't want to start getting locked into, is it 11 stops, is it 13 stops, is it whatever? Or it could mean that they actually have something up their sleeve and that's coming at NAB time.
Well, I mean, maybe it's part of the data rates and the signal processing. A lot of the reason for these changes and a lot of the reason why we're getting a lot of these spec bumps is the fact that they've taken in-house a lot more of the development process, and so they've come up with a few more approaches to some of the
data rate shouldn't change the dynamic range of the sensor. The data rate should just change things like the data rate, which therefore translates to the frame rate. In other words, if you've got a pipe that can take, 50 frames at 9K, then it can take 250 at 2K.
Yeah.
That should be a direct link to the red code, whereas the dynamic range should be something that the sensor is kind of picking up. In fact, the dynamic range isn't even linked to the bit depth per se. The bit depth of the cameras is the sort of resolution upon which you can fine-tune or fine-slice down to on the color. But the dynamic range is really a function of just the inherent properties of the sensor for capturing between light and dark.
So, I mean, basically then are all these bodies going to have the same dynamic range, TBA?
Yeah, I don't know.
Whatever it be, I'm presuming it'll be the higher end of what it was we were talking last time, 13 stops maybe, was it?
Yeah, or that just simply hasn't changed and they just didn't bother putting it on the brochure.
Well, yeah.
The other one that's interesting is that same detailed spec system no longer focuses at all on mounts. Now, I made a bit of a fuss about mounts in our last Red Center.
Yeah. Now, you've had a bit of a chat with Red since then about mounts, yeah?
Yeah, no, totally. And I think that we should point out that in the massive brochure-y thing, there is a kind of a, pick your lens, pick your body, pick your whatever. And one of the throwaway lines is kind of pick your mount.
Yeah.
And it comes in the interchangeability and upgrades everything page. And it just says interchangeable lens mounts, and it implies pretty much that you can pick whichever lens mount you want to a point. And I made a bit of a fuss about this because of the issue to do with back focus and stuff, and I mentioned this to the guys at Red, and I think their attitude is kind of interesting, and it's a valid attitude, and it makes sense to a point. I think their attitude at the moment is best characterized, of course, it's in flux, so this could change, but they're going to sort of pretty much let you put any lens on any camera mount, even though that may be a dumb thing to do.
Any non-2/3 camera body, right?
Yeah, they're even not really locking out anything, basically, right? Other than the fixed 2/3, okay. Yeah.
At the moment, I'd say that the presumption should be that any of the non-2/3 bodies, that you can put whatever mount on there, the Red mount, Canon, Nikon, or PL.
Yeah, and I don't think they're even ruling out putting PL on the 2/3 inch.
Okay.
But here's the thing. It isn't necessarily a sensible thing to do those. So they know that. They completely understand that if I put a Nikon DX lens on a big full frame 35, it's not targeting correctly.
Absolutely.
Or if I put a Nikon on a 2/3 inch, it's going to way overshoot the sensor.
Look, I think everyone should just, you know, that's a buyer beware thing. If you're getting the mounts, it's, you know, you're running your own race there. I think people should be really just happy that we're actually going to probably be able to put any mount on any body, and it's your choice after that, really. Obviously, people are going to work it out for themselves.
Yeah, I mean, there is going to be artifacts introduced by doing this. You can have, in some cases, vignetting. In some cases, you're going to have things that are actually cropped. In other cases, some of the markings on the lens won't be true or read inaccurately. Yeah. But their attitude is, if you know that and you choose to want to get that look, that artifact, that particular property, I mean, maybe you want to shoot a whole music video where you see the corners of the frame, then you should be allowed to do it. And, you know, as you say, a bit like buyer beware.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think people are definitely would rather have choice. The choice is to make their own mistakes versus being, you know, having that limited to them. And I think that, as you say, there's a lot of people who've got a lot of investment in glass, people who quite happily shoot, have got, case loads of Nikon glass or Canon glass that would really love the ability to be able to put it on a 2/3 inch Scarlett.
Yeah. Well, I think, when all is said and done, a refinement. I think there's some other price drops as well, wasn't there? Like the F35 Scarlett?
Yeah, the full-frame 35 Scarlett dropped from 11K down to 9,750, which I think is fantastic. There's added a whole bunch of frame rates all along the way. A lot of the Epics have dropped a couple of grand. The full-frame 35 Epic down a couple of grand. The 645 and the 617, they're all sort of, all prices have come down a little bit. So and obviously specs have gone up. So really, it's sort of a tightening of the whole range and a bit of sweetening of the deal, really.
The other thing that I'm kind of interested to see, and I think direct response to the Canon 5D Mark II, is that I'm going to say my now because I intend to get my Epic X Limited Edition Two Tone S35 Pro Cinema.
So that's what you're getting, is it, mate?
Well, it's certainly the first thing I'm getting.
Yep.
Is listed to have what's called FF 1080p, which in my case goes between 1 and 60 frames. So this is something that just needs a little bit of explanation. If you were to generate a 1920 by 1080 HD video signal using simplistic techniques, you could throw away data you didn't want, literally. And that's what, in fact, the Canon 5D Mark II is doing. It's actually throwing away lines of information it doesn't want. So instead of sampling and saying, well, I'm going to interpolate this whole frame down, it's saying, you know what, let's just ignore the second line, the fourth line, the sixth line, and the eighth line, and we'll just call it quids, and that gets our data rates instantly lower. Mm. Red has come up with a full frame reduction of the original, whatever you're shooting, say 4K, down to 1920 by 1080, but in the case of my camera, that's going to be able to then only run at frame rates of 1 to 60 frames because it has to do that, obviously, on the fly in the camera and go from the 4K to the 1920 by 1080.
The mindset behind this, Mike, so is that, I mean, a lot of these cameras are going to be able to do this full-frame 1080p setup. I'm guessing it's to try and simplify the whole post thing.
I'm willing
for
to make a bet. That's
people.
Exactly what it is. It's like, you know what? Yeah. If you want to shoot and get terrific depth of field things from shooting on a 645 Pro, which is effectively this big mid-format thing, and you've got the look you want, but you just want to come out HD so that you can use it for on-air for a commercial,
yeah,
then you know what? Just hit it into full-frame 1080p mode. You'll get up to 60 frames a second, which, you know, lets you shoot off-speed a little. I mean, I think
for some cameras, yeah.
32 frames a second, that kind of thing. Well, I was just referring to the 645.
Your camera, sorry.
No. Actually, the 645 is your camera.
Okay.
That was the one that you identified last week.
That's
you
generous
wanted.
Of you, Mike.
The one that shoots mid-format kind of size. So if you wanted that, you had said last week, maybe you've changed your mind.
No, you wanted to shoot. That's
with
the one I'm renting. That's how much my rental company will be purchasing for, or unless I get a feature up, in which case I'll buy
with your anamorphic lenses.
That's exactly right.
Okay, but anyway, let's call that one your camera for a second. The point of the discussion is more that you get the look you want, but you just get it out at 1080p because if you're doing a commercial, that's all you'd really need.
Yeah, that's right. Look, I think what's going to help with is like the... Because obviously what you're going to have with the Scarlett, the fixed-lens Scarlett, that's going to be thrown neck deep into the whole HVX 200 P2 kind of world where everyone's so used to just pulling out a card and, you know, bang, I slap it in, I've got 1080p footage straight out of the camera. So I think that's really going to help that camera transition its way into the non-RED world, which seriously, that's obviously what this is going to be competing against, going actually spreading the wings, the halo effect out from the RED universe into tackling head-on all those other cameras that can do it really simply.
You could shoot 24 frames a second, nice 1920x1080 from an oversampled image in, say, well, in that case it'd be 16x9. But if you wanted to, you could also go to 3K and do 150 frames a second burst.
Yeah.
Which would be pretty cool.
That would be awesome. There has been significant raises in the frame rates in some of these other cameras, in particularly in the Epix, being able to go up to 250 or 350 frames per second, like the full frame 35 Epix being able to go to 350 frames per second on 2K is pretty awesome.
It is. Though I really think that my camera going up to 160 frames at 3K will do me fine.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, or 4K, 125. Like, this is all fantastic. This is all the reason why these cameras are going to be the one up from RED One, and what's going
to
differentiate.
Yeah, I really
need
to go above 100, but going to be able to go to 250 frames if I just absolutely had to.
Absolutely. That's the thing about sort of slow mo is that you don't have to go very fast for it to look very fast. Often, you know, I'll say, oh, look, shoot it at 50, and you think, oh, great. You can't even cut it in. It's like treacle. It's so slow. Often, 50, it's slower than you think.
And people say, I want 1,000 frames a second. And, you know, 1,000 frames a second cameras are good, but they tend to be used for water balloons bursting a lot.
That's right. And slow-mo diving and stuff at the Olympics or cricket swings. And that, yeah, and when you look at what they've got to do, those shots, when you look at them on the Olympics or the cricket or whatever, those shots go for a long time. You've got to have some serious editing space to be able to cut them in. So it's not for everyone, but it's fantastic that it's there. I think, obviously, the people have spoken.
Okay, well, moving along, is there any gear that has been overshadowed by this announcement?
Yeah, we've got gear.
Terrific. Let's shift gear then and have a look at that.
And now, the Red Setter Gear Guide.
Okay, well, the first thing is I've got follow focus, Mike. You don't have a follow focus, do you?
I'm about to get one. I was waiting to see what was happening with this stuff so that we wouldn't...
Well, this is a Cinevate one, and I ordinarily was sort of a big fan, having done that for decades, a big fan of the huge, you know, the Arri follow focus, FF3s and FF2s. But they are, for 90% of people, they are so phenomenally expensive. This is a product from Cinevate that I think is really affordable and looks, for a change, actually looks really well made. Its simplicity is not going to hamper the way it works. I think it looks like it's really built really, really well, and you're not going to sort of regret the purchase, I don't think. So this is the Durus Follow Focus, D-U-R-U-S. So if you go to Cinevate.com. This is a beautifully machined aluminium CNC machined the follow focus unit. And the difference between this and obviously why it can be so affordable is it actually only clamps onto one rod, but it looks like it clamps on so tightly you're not going to get any slip. It's not going to slip away from the lens at the critical moment. Got a machined Delrin ring for doing your markups and has rods to suit, and has cogs rather to suit all lenses, and it's only $895. I think it's a gorgeous little thing.
Give me one of those.
Yeah, so it can be mounted on the left or right hand side, because obviously the other thing with the follow focus, the FF2 or FF3 from Arri, is that it automatically has focus from if you have to work on the left or the right hand side. So you can mount it left or right. Yeah, so I think it's a really gorgeous, gorgeous little setup, and they have a 15mm. Or 19mm version. So if you go to Cinevate.com, looks like very gorgeous. The other piece of kit, which I know would be close to your heart, Mike, would be a couple of bits and pieces for the 18-85, the RED 18-85. Two things from Duclos Lenses, D-U-C-L-O-S, lenses.com. And that is a lens cap.
Ah, just what you want, actually.
Yes. So, obviously, the factory cap that comes, like a lot of caps from anybody, regardless of whether you buy a lens from Cook or whatever, is a pretty flimsy piece of plastic. And if you pick up the lens the wrong way, you're going to push the actual cap can actually touch the front element, which is obviously crap. And they also have a fantastic lens mount, something obviously sorely missing, and we've discussed that before, for the 18-85.
Both of those, actually. You're costing me a lot of money today.
No, these are quite cheap. So the cap is $95, and the 18-85 bracket is $345. So the bracket seems really, really simple and looks like it has a little bit of height adjustability to suit a lot of rigs and a lot of mounts.
Well, we'll definitely follow up with that in the show notes.
Duclosslenses.com, and we'll put links and pictures to both of those in the show notes.
Moving on from gear, I did touch on the fact that we were going to look at, before we get to our Red Room interview this week, the Final Cut Studio new changes from Red for post-production. I've had a chance to play with this now, Jason, basically work through it. So let me just explain what's going on. Ability to take in a QuickTime into Final Cut has been obviously there for a long time, and that's been incredibly useful. But what you are taking in is a QuickTime proxy. With a new plugin from Red that came out a couple of weeks ago, you can now actually load up such that you can use the log and transfer function to bring in Red footage directly. Now, the only trouble with doing this is, well, actually, there's a lot of trouble with doing this. I don't actually like this.
Okay.
I'll tell you why I don't like it. I don't like it I don't like it at a. It's not like I hate it with the intensity of 1,000 white hot suns. I just don't like it in the terms of, I don't like it. So it's not, you know, these are minor points to some. To me, they're just annoying. You bring in a clip, and for a start, right now on our testing, it isn't looking exactly the same as it does in Red Alert. So I'm not saying it's wrong. There just needs to be some, either a gamma shift or something. They just don't seem to be coming in looking exactly as I expect them. And I like to have Unity offset so I know what the DOP shot. Now, I can bring things in as ProRes 422, ProRes HQ, or in native, and it's native that's actually bringing in the R3Ds. And actually, all of them, they're just bringing in, and they just don't look exactly the same. You open them simultaneously on the same monitor with Red Alert, and they just don't look identical.
So you open a Final Cut, blank Final Cut project, don't even select any settings, go grab some R3Ds and drop them into the timeline, and
no,
it says...
No, you don't drop them into the timeline. You use this log and transfer. So you open up a thing that says log and transfer, and right. It then facilitates you bringing in the R3Ds, and it's not as simple as drop and drag for two reasons. Firstly, you have to pick whether it comes in as a converted ProRes file. In other words, converts the R3Ds to ProRes. And then when it's done that, right, that's it. Game over. Mm-hmm. You're out of red land. It's as if you've rendered them out somewhere.
Yep.
If you bring them in as native, which is the new sort of amazing thing.
That's the new step, yeah.
Then what's happening is they're coming in as native files, but they still have to put a little QuickTime thing for Final Cut to play them. So it's not instantaneous. There's a little render time to bring them onto the timeline.
But not a mind-numbing one-to-one
render like that is to Apple ProRes, but still, it's not insignificant.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just so many little things that aren't quite polished yet. For example, when you go to do that, there's a definite, I don't know, 30 seconds, 15 seconds, where it's kind of working stuff out. There's no beach ball to tell you it's thinking. So you're kind of thinking, have I done this yet? And then all of a sudden it kind of comes to life and starts doing it. It's obviously doing some processing behind the scenes. You just don't know. If you multiply bring in the same clip, which we did. So in other words, I've got a shot of you, Jace. I want to bring it in. I change some settings. I'm bringing it in again. It updates the number that it thinks it is in Final Cut, which means it updates the name, which means it's no longer backward compatible.
Right.
So if I had a file that, you know, ended in the letters RS or something, it would then go RT and RQ.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So
for each subsequent appearance of that clip into the timeline.
So I keep on bringing the clip in multiple times, and Final Cut has stuff in there so that it updates to the next version, but I don't want it to update the next version because updating the next version effectively changes the file name.
And is it one of those things where, like, if you're working with something that's not quite the right, if you, every time you change it or you sort of trim the back end of it or cut it in half or whatever, it has to endlessly keep re-rendering the file?
No, it's not like that at all. It's fine, but just once you... But it would be very easy for someone to bring in a clip. So that's not right. Delete it. Bring in another one.
Mm.
It's now got an incrementally up one name. And then later on, somebody else is trying to find that file. And it's this has got a different file name. I don't know why.
Yeah. Well, this sounds like a couple of glitches in the whole.
It's glitches
there.
That just are kind of annoying. That's why I said I don't like it. It's not that I hate it. I just don't like it. The other thing is...
So skip it for a bit till they fix that then.
Yeah. The other bit that is really significant... is not actually in Final Cut, it's in color. That when I bring these clips in, I actually have a new tab that appears in color, which gives me access to all the things like saturation, Kelvin, tint, exposure, you know, all the ISO and color space stuff. Now, I think that's terrific. I really do. And so that may be reason enough to want to do this. But
yeah.
I should flag that color stuff, you know, has to be balanced out by some serious Final Cut little kind of annoyances. That if you don't, you know what you're doing, can really trip you up. So,
So basically you can have color open on one screen and your Final Cut timeline open on the other.
And I say export this to color,
right,
and it opens it in color.
Yep.
And then I can tweak it like I could kind of in Red Alert,
yep,
in color, which is great.
Yeah.
But the gotchas are other things. Like if I bring in 3K, color turns that into 1.5K.
Okay.
Because it doesn't support higher than 2K in Final Cut.
But that's just how it deals with it when it saves it again.
Back
out as 3K.
The 4K comes in as 2K. The 2K comes in as 2K. 3K comes into Final Cut as 3K, even though it doesn't support it, exports it over to color, and then turns it into 1.5K. See what I'm saying? See what I'm saying? Like, it's not...
This is dealing with a file format that we've now had for how long?
Well, I'm just saying, other people are raving
over
about
a year.
It. I'm kind of... Having tested it properly, I'm just like, you know what? I just want version 2 or version 1.5 even.
But what kind of world or herd are we going to be entering when we get the, you know, all of these new red codes, 40, 80, 100 red codes, and you know, from 15 different resolutions of camera? I mean, we touched on this last time, but if we're having these kinds of, you know, pain from a file format that's been around for over a year... What can we expect from this next batch?
Yeah, well, it gets worse. I think I'm right in saying that if you wanted to get clever, you can save your settings out of Red Alert and then use your settings in the imported Final Cut. Though in my testing, that is supporting everything but a color space shift. And so from what I can gather, you get it looking right and bring it into Red Alert, and then you... take it from Red Alert and open it up in Final Cut, and suddenly it's shifted its color space. But as the other settings are still the changed settings, the image just goes completely wonky. Not ridiculously wonky, but just like enough off that you go, well, that wasn't what I was just looking at. It'd be enough that if you were sitting beside me, you'd pick up a newspaper and hit me over the head and say, can you pay attention? So anyway, I just say that there is a terrifically good red FCP white paper that comes out when you download it. So read that, but it is not plug and play. It's not drag and drop.
Yeah.
And if you're not paying attention, you could really do your head in. But hey, if you guys have found something different to that, let us know at red@fxguide.com. So now you have a red room for us this week?
I actually have the last in the tripod section. So it's not really a red room. I'm talking to Ali Ahmadi from Sachla or Sachla. You'll hear his fantastic
pronunciation.
You'll hear, well, these Sachla used to be the sort of gold sort of standard for heads until O'Connor really sort of came onto the market. Pretty much every package that went out on set would have had a Sachla 7 plus 7. So O'Connor's kind of you know, overtaken that a bit. But yes, I definitely got a soft spot for the old classic Sachla 7 plus 7. But sounds like Sachla are still doing some fantastic stuff, and Ali will outline all that for us, particularly obviously how it pertains to choosing a package for Red, anywhere from, you know, full-on studio up to, you know, climbing mountain sort of work. So, yeah, here's Ali.
You're entering the Red Room.
Okay, I'm speaking to Ali Ahmadi, Product and Marketing Manager for Vitech. Thanks for taking the time today, Ali.
My pleasure.
Well, you can actually start today by telling me how to pronounce Sachla. I'm sure I've been pronouncing it completely wrong all this time.
Well, I'm actually German, so I can say it the proper way, which is Sachla. And it is based on, this is the last name of the company founder. His name was Wendelin Sachler, and he founded the company about 50 years, or actually exactly 50 years ago, because we're celebrating our 50-year anniversary here this year in 2008. And Wendelin Sachler was a German cameraman, producer, director, and even actor, a true Renaissance guy. He did it all, and he kind of, in his day-to-day business of making movies, he was faced with the problem that there wasn't the right camera support out there so he can implement his visual visions. And so he set out to design his own camera support, and that was the birth of Sachla.
Fantastic. So what do we need to take into account when choosing a tripod package for a Red One?
Well, generally, when we're talking about the Red One, it is not necessarily a light camera, just when we're talking about the body itself. And then what really makes and breaks the Red setups for the right fluid heads and tripods is how you accessorize it. We have a lot of experience talking to Red users, and we've seen a lot of different Red setups. And what we've seen due to the layout of the buttons and the interfaces and the ins and outs on the camera, a lot of the accessories end up being rigged fairly high. So you do have this extremely compact but solid body, and then you have the lens out front with a matte box, and you probably want to use rods or something like that. And but as soon as you start putting batteries on there, you can't just slap the battery onto the back because that's full of buttons and the display back there. So a lot of people end up rigging the battery fairly high, rigging the monitors fairly high. If somebody puts a hard drive on there, that usually ends up being fairly high. So this all raises the center of gravity. So even though the setup might not be very heavy on the pound scale because the center of gravity is so high, that does have a major impact on the fluid head, on the camera head, on the tripod head.
So if in doubt, go big.
We see this very often in our day-to-day business where people buy cameras and then start accessorizing their camera, and they buy, for example, a follow focus or a battery or a monitor or a microphone, and they very well know that this is a first step, and as time will progress, they end up buying more of this, or they end up upgrading this to the next level or accessories of the next higher caliber and so on. And so what happens is you have to be very careful when you do buy your camera support, because it is such a solid investment and because it lasts so long, you have to really make sure that that investment is future-proof, because you very quickly start accessorizing the camera. You will always be adding more stuff to the camera and to your setup. And so if you not consciously mind that when you're making your initial purchase, then you can find yourself with an underspec'd tripod system.
So buy for the camera system you think you might have in the future, not the camera system you've got today.
Exactly. Buy it for your working setup of tomorrow. So really future-proof your investment.
Okay, let's start at the top. What's the sort of high end for Red One?
Well, the top end would be the Cine 30 HD, which is a 150mm head. It was specifically designed for the cinematography market. And it has a side load mechanism, so it's very much like it has the interface that has been used in the cinematography world. It has the same plate design that is used in certain Arri plates, or that it's compatible to the O'Connor plates. And so there's a lot of accessories out there, like dovetail plates and stuff like that.
Right, so same plates, same dimensions as O'Connor.
Yeah, the O'Connor 2575, which is like the real 35mm cinematography standard, or the 120EX uses the same profile. And so it's the same dimension, so they're compatible. Arri has, like I said, some dovetail plates that'll just snap right in there. The good thing is, because it's a side load, it is very easy to take that heavy payload and snap it in. It loads from the side rather than some other heads that use like we call it the touch and go plate, which it actually sits down from the top. So this just slides in and it clips in and it's already self-securing. And it also gives another huge advantage, because it is a side load plate. It gives you a lot of sliding range, which means you can, on the head, you can move the camera payload forwards and backwards. Now, why is that so important? In order to properly balance a camera payload, you have to bring the center of gravity onto the center of axis from the head. Now, if your sliding range is limited, you might get to a point where the center of gravity of your payload is not on the pivot point, on top of the pivot point of the head, and then you will have problems balancing your payload, because the head will either droop back or fall forward, depending on where that center of gravity is. So the Cine 30 HD was designed for the cinematography purpose, and it has a payload of 3 to 35 kilos, or for all the fans of pounds, it's 7 to 77 pounds, and it has 18 steps, and it also uses a boost button. So the counterbalance range is divided up into steps. It is not continuous, which gives the benefit that you can counterbalance very quickly. It's not like a continuous system perfect counterbalance, but Sachtler, that's the philosophy of Sachtler, it's all about being able to get to the counterbalance quickly, and even if it's not perfect, it's close enough, but it goes quick, so you have a very fast setup time.
Right, so it's the quick switch-in, switch-out style of counterbalance we're used to with something like the 7 plus 7.
So you adjust the counterbalance with a rotary step that's in the back of the head, so right in front of the operator, and it's just, you just turn the knob. And then there's also a boost button, so you can shift the whole counterbalance up and down just with this boost button. Another great advantage is it has a space, so you can put your front pan bars, you know, it has the rosettes in the front, so some cinematographers like to pan and tilt using a front pan bar, and it also has a viewfinder extension mounting area, and it has a place for the front box, which is a little wooden box that goes in front of the head where the assistants can put all of the accessories, like a little brushes and so on, to clean the lenses.
Love a front box.
Yeah, front boxes are cool.
So this looks more than enough for a Red One.
Well, with 35 kilos, 77 pounds, that is a lot of weight. For anybody who feels like that might not be enough, there's also a Cine 75 HD, which goes up to 75 kilos. And you know what the most amazing part is about the Sachtler heads? The insides are basically the same. The physical principle, the technology on the inside is and has been the same. It's always just scale. But the drag modules have been designed the same. The springs are of the same basic construction. They're just scaled, bigger and more of it. So that you truly get a Sachtler, no matter what size you buy. It's always a Sachtler on the inside.
Sounds great when you pronounce it.
You know what? It doesn't matter how you pronounce it. Just call us.
So do you do like flat base and bowl versions for every head?
No, we couldn't do that. We have plenty of adapters. You can adapt the Cine 30 over to Mitchell. You can adapt it over to flat base. What we don't support is, of course, that you would adapt a 150mm head to a 100mm bowl. You can't go to a smaller bowl, because that wouldn't be a safe thing to do. But like once you're in 150mm bowl land, you can adapt over to Mitchell, you can adapt over to standard flat bases. Yeah, no problem.
So if I want to be a bit more portable and want to run a smaller package, a lighter package, there'll be a 100mm bowl solution, I guess.
Of course, we support smaller heads as well. We have, for example, something that'll work fairly well in this area is the video 20SB or the video 18SB. They're fairly close to each other. One has a maximum, the 20 has a maximum payload of 25 kilos, whereas the 18 has a maximum of 18 kilos. So you see they're kind of like in the same weight range, but clearly different limits. And between the two, you can then kind of choose which one you want, and both are 100mm options. They both are part of the speed balance range, so again, they have this rotary counterbalance style in the back of the head that will allow you to counterbalance your payload very fast. The 20 has 12 steps of counterbalance. The 18 has 10 steps of counterbalance. But both have 7 steps of drag, both in the horizontal and vertical, and always plus the zero. And both heads can do plus minus 90 degrees tilt.
And these smaller heads, they look exactly the same as the larger ones. Everything seems scaled up. It's the same design. It's what you're used to.
Well, you know what it is. It's all about muscle memory. So you've used it, and so you go to a Neusachtler, you will still find everything roughly in the same place. You will interact with the head in the same way, so you don't have to think about it. It's all muscle memory. It all comes natural to you.
I mean, there must be some sacrifices, though, going to the 100mm bowls. It must be throwing away some functionality somewhere.
Well, yes, the key difference, though, is that the Cine 30 has all these accessories and places for accessories for cinematography, and it also has the side load plate that truly is a key element in the way you interact with it, because it does give you that extra sliding range. The 18 and the 20 SBs, they do have a sliding range, but because they have a touch and go plate, the sliding range is not as large.
Sure. Okay. Moving on to tripods, what have you got that's cool?
Well, Sachtler has something really cool called the Speed Lock. It's a carbon fiber tripod that is two-stage, but it locks and opens and locks both stages with one lever that is attached to the top of the first stage, so that you don't have to bend all the way down to the ground to open and lower it, and it opens both stages and locks both stages at the same time. This came out of the philosophy to basically be able to set up your camera fast. So it's very rugged. In fact, there's a regular version and a heavy duty version of it, which is called HD. The tripod is a little older, so back in those days when we said HD, we meant heavy duty and not high definition.
Cool. Anything else?
Well, there is a tripod I really want to tell you about in the 150mm range. It's called the Cine tripod, and there's two versions. There's the Mitchell version, and then there's the 150mm bowl version. And you have it as a Cine 150 long and a 150 medium. And these are true cinematography, professional, Hollywood-style tripods. They're very, very beefy. They're very, very sturdy. No carbon fiber there. That's aluminum. And they give you a very, very solid base for shooting.
And again, those will come in flat base or bowl versions.
Yeah, the Cine just straight up comes in two versions, either the 150mm bowl or the Mitchell. So you order one or the other. If you're like in a rental environment where you have to switch between the two, it's fairly easy to change the top casting, and basically you can buy one and buy the, let's say you buy the 150mm tripod, and then you can buy the Mitchell top casting. Then you can switch between the two.
Cool. So, what's next?
Let me give you a little sneak peek. Maybe, possibly, by the spring of next year, there will be a new product in the area of the Video 18, Video 20, that could be specially designed for cinematography use. And I think I'll leave it at that and not say anything else.
Excellent. So, well, that sounds like it could suit Scarlett and the like. But that'll be around NAB time then, maybe.
NAB is always a good time to stop by our booth.
Right, okay. Say no more.
Yeah.
Look, thanks, Ali, for taking the time to have a chat today.
It's my pleasure.
Where can people go to find out more?
Well, the best place to go is, of course, our website, which is www.sachtler.com.
Great. Thanks for that, Ali. See you later.
See you at NAB. Thanks.
Well, thanks for that, Jace. So that's the end of our tripody kind of thing, which got sort of split up a bit by red announcements
Indeed.
And special apps.
Hopefully.
I enjoyed that special roundtable we did with Stu. That was good.
Yeah, look, I'm sure we'll have another one at some stage later on. But yes, theoretically, we should be back to, unless Red throws in some new announcements, we should be back to normal process next time.
Yeah, and I'm keen to continue on with what we were doing before, which is working our way through companies other than Red and Apple that do support of Red files, and we have some new ones and some interesting stuff happening from Quantel and other people. So I'll be catching up with all of those in coming weeks.
Because I think that's obviously going to be the real thing. You know, obviously there's a lot of gear coming out, but there's a lot of gear already out there. People wanting to still get it in front of, you know, get it on set. The less pain there is in post, the easier it is to get this stuff rented and get people using it.
If you want to keep track of what we're up to on a moment-to-moment, day-by-day basis, I'm on Twitter at twitter.com/Mike Seymour. And Jason, you're...
Twitter.com/Wingrove or jasonwingrove.com.
Which is actually not a bad place to be when Red is making new announcements for pithy remarks and wisecracks. But anyway.
Second by second, pithy remarks.
So, look, we appreciate all the feedback you guys give us, and there's been a lot recently. So thank you so much. It's great fun to do this, and it's particularly good when we hear from you guys.
Yep, thanks for that. And, keep them coming. Red at fxguide.com if you've got any constructive criticism.
Talk to you next time. See you guys.
See you guys.
Thanks for listening. If you have any questions or comments, please email us, red@fxguide.com. Copyright 2008 FX Guide, LLC.